Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes for 2017. I'm Naveen Razik. Alongside me, as always, is Joshua Carrolden. Josh, how's your week? Sorry, Josh, how's your summer been?
Pretty good summer. Really recharged batteries, but as always, you know, I was wandering around my house for the past month, you know, wondering where on earth motorsport went. But thankfully, it is back for 2017.
Yeah, should be a very exciting year. We've got a big year lined up in Formula One, supercars, and much more. We go first to Formula One. We're going to have a quick look at everything that happened in the preseason, including the big news that came right from the top that Bernie Eccleston has left the building. He's been ousted in favour of Ross Brawn, Chase Carey, and Sean Bratches, who comes in from Liberty Media. Finally, Josh, the Wicked Witch is dead.
Yeah, well, It's a brand new era for Formula One. Like, you know, never before has there been such a big amount of change in off season for a very, very long time. You know, it's going to be a very different paddock to the one that we had at the end of the season at Abu Dhabi last year. So, Liberty Media, they've got full control now. Like, they can basically do as they please. Like, I mean, there still can be resistance from the FIA, but at the end of the day, it is technically their show now, so they can have full reign. I loved how as soon as they took over, the YouTube production role instantly kicked into higher gear for like a week or so, and they trialed some pretty interesting things on their YouTube channel. Getting some stock footage from 2016, and you know, just really playing with some camera trickery to really manipulate just the visuals and just try to enhance them and build up some hype for the 2017 season. So far, it's been pretty good from them. Not a lot of resistance and, oh my God, we're going to turn into NASCAR comments. But, you know, they're always going to be around. But on the whole, many fans do appreciate what they've done so far, and it's looking real good, but the real test is going to come at the first marquee and the first Grand Prix of the season at Melbourne.
Yes, so Chase Carey takes over in Bernie Eccleston's position, effectively, as the overlord. Meanwhile, Ross Brawn, who was denying it pretty much for most of last year, is returning to the sport. He will be running the sporting side, whilst former ESPN executive Sean Bratches will run the commercial side of the sport. So Ross Brawn, that's probably the big thing for fans. We finally got somebody running the sport who actually knows the sporting side of the sporting regulations. And I think the general feeling for most of the fans is this is going to be much better than the previous owners. We can't do any worse than CVC. So all around, it's looking pretty optimistic. The thing is as well, when I think about Bernie Eccleston, I think about the Monty Python sketch from the film Life of Brian. What have the Romans ever done for this, for us? Because we need to remember that not necessarily everything Bernie Eccleston was bad. He turned what was a fairly loosely organized sport into a global media powerhouse. His selling of the TV rights has turned it into probably one of the biggest worldwide sports and transformed it from a niche sport to a mainstream one. But there is still the thing that he was arguably harming the sport more than helping it at the end. And personally, I think he should have gone at the end of 2013 because he clearly wasn't happy with the 2014 regulations. So I think he should have nipped it in the bud then. But still, it's nice to see that it's a fairly bloodless coup either. I mean, if he had died on the throne, I think there would have been lots of issues going around. But because the succession plan was obviously clearly worked out, I think it's been pretty smooth so far, and hopefully Ross Brawn and the like should be able to take Formula One to a better place.
Yes, that's all well said and done. But you know, we do have to give Benny credit, as Naveen said. You know, he really did take this Formula One up onto the global stage, and like realistically, if he had gone at like, you know, 2010, even when social media was starting to take off, I do believe he would have been, you know, viewed in a much more positive light, you know, just because, you know, he just didn't get and just didn't catch the social media train that now dominates world sport. So, Yeah, like, there's always going to be that debate about when he really should have left. I think around 2010 when social media was going to take off. But yeah, just, like, you know, he's done a lot for the sport. And yeah, as I said earlier, you know, it's a brand new era for Formula One.
So we move on next to the big news coming out of the driver market, something which, let's face it, we were suspecting for a couple of months beforehand. As soon as Nico Rosberg announced his retirement, but Valtteri Bottas has slipped into that second Mercedes seat, effectively snubbing Pascal Wehrlein, who's stuck at Sauber in the end. A fairly safe choice from Mercedes. And now the onus is on Bottas to deliver and actually show some sort of resistance to Lewis Hamilton, who will probably be coming in with the greatest hunger this season.
Yeah, so it's a year of opportunity for Bottas. Like, he's either going to become the next Kimi Raikkonen for Finland, or he's going to become the next Keke Kovalainen for Finland. It's either going to be one of the two. There is no middle ground. He's going to be one or the other. So, yeah, like, I mean, when, you know, the news of Rosberg's retirement came out last year, like, I mean, like, I always thought it's a big deal, but a risky deal. Like, you have to, like, you and your manager have to know that it's going to work out for the best for you, and you're not going to, you know, become a nobody overnight. So there is that. So yeah, I'll go back to it. It's a big move on Bottas's and his management's part. But yeah, I honestly don't know how he's going to go, because the only real marker he's being placed up against is Felipe Massa, and he did pretty all right against Massa. But then again, like, it wasn't against the Massa of old that was almost the 2008 world champion. So, yeah, Bottas, you know, even though, you know, he's done a lot of racing, like in the junior categories, he was Daniel Ricciardo's main rival. We still don't know that much about him and his ability. This year, we definitely will with Lewis. He's definitely in the deep end. And, for his sake, I hope it works out for him. But yeah, I've just got the feeling that it's going to be a one-year wonder.
And that's the thing, because we haven't had a good marker to put him up against. The Williams have always been sort of in this weird middle zone between the front runners and the midfield, where you haven't really seen them gone out of that. And also, I think it's going to be interesting to see how their relationship develops, considering that Valtteri Bottas ran into Lewis Hamilton at last year's Bahrain Grand Prix. So yeah, because Bottas leaves Williams, Williams have had to bring back Felipe Massa, who enjoyed what is probably one of the fairest shortest retirements in Formula One.
Well, it's not as short as his championship reign, but again, Massa, this has to be his final year. He's really there to just mentor and, you know, sort of back up Lance Stroll. Williams, you know, they really do have to go hard. Not only in R&D, but just for their reserve drivers, because, you know, it's a bit shaky ground now. I think Alex Lynn, who was their reserve driver last year, he's gone elsewhere, I believe. I'm not too sure on that. It's been a while since I've read up on it. But, yeah, Williams, you know, like, they need to do some driver hunting, and, you know, they really do need to read the driver market very well in terms of who's going where for 2018.
Could we see a comeback for Paul DiResta? Maybe.
Maybe.
It wouldn't be so far out of the question. So with that, we pretty much know the entire driver lineup for everybody in 2017. Let's have a quick run through. So at Mercedes, it is Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas siding up together. At Red Bull, it's similarly Daniel Ricciardo and Max Verstappen. No change there. No change there. Also at Ferrari, who are keeping Kimi Raikkonen along with Sebastian Vettel. Of course, big changes at Williams, where we've got Lance Stroll coming in alongside Felipe Massa, who is staying with the team. After that, at Force India, Sergio Perez will be shaping up next to Esteban Ocon, who's probably the big winner out of the two Mercedes junior drivers, who were caught a bit unaware with what happened with Haas, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Also at McLaren, we've got Stoffel Vandoorne, who is coming in to replace Jenson Button, alongside Fernando Alonso in what is the last year of his original three-year contract. So the future of Fernando Alonso's Formula One career is still up in the air. We also have no change at Toro Rosso. Daniel Kvyat and Carlos Sainz, probably the last season for both of those guys. you have to say. You generally don't see people staying more than 3
years
in the
tour. Well, it's difficult at the moment because obviously there is Pierre Gasly, who's almost certain going to be in 2018 at one of the Toro Rosso seats. Also, and beyond that, it's a little bit difficult to make out because I think the next Red Bull Junior driver in line is a Finnish driver in terms of Nino Kari, I believe his name is, and I think he's only in GP3. So, yeah, like, I mean, it's almost definitely Daniel Kvyat's last season at Toro Rosso, but, you know, just a big question mark over Carlos Sainz. Like, we know he's good enough to really be, you know, a real consistent frontline runner. But is anyone actually going to be, you know, willing to give him the opportunity? So, yeah, big question mark over the second Toro Rosso seat for 2018. But Pierre Gasly is the obvious front runner for the first seat, you know. But it sort of depends on how he goes in Super Formula, but, you know, it's pretty likely that he will get that Toro Rosso seat for 2018.
Also coming up, bringing up the rear of the end of the grid, it's Renault Sport F1 team, who have Nico Hülkenberg and Julian Palmer. Should be big things from them this year. And finally, Sauber, who have Marcus Ericsson and Pascal Wehrlein. They'll be running last year's Ferrari power unit, which probably is in the best way to go. The one team that was there last year that won't be shaping up this year, unfortunately, is Manor F1 team, which slipped into administration over the summer and was unable to find a buyer, and that is that. The final team from 2010 is no more. A very disappointing end. And it's a shame to see that they were looking so good until pretty much the second last race, when Felipe Nasr, who wasn't even driving for Sauber anymore, decided to get those 2 points, which bumped them back to the bottom of the field. And that was pretty much the end for Manor.
Yeah, so basically it's another case of a Brazilian, I call it a tsunami of water. It is one man's game, but another man's, tragedy. And, you know, that is the case right now for Manor. As Naveen said, really disappointing and also pretty frustrating, because this could have been, Manor's big breakout year with the amount and the amount of time and resources that they put, into the development of their 2017 car. It looked pretty okay, in the, 1/3 scale, you know, just before the team died for good. But yeah, just, what might have been, and, you know, no buyers were found. Like, there were, there was a offer of $22 million, from, the American who set up the US and Mexican Grand Prix, which, almost certainly would have brought Esteban Gutierrez back into Formula One with a Manor seat. But yeah, just a disappointing end, and it almost, you know, confirms the Haas's way to enter Formula One is the only sustainable way to enter Formula One, and pretty worryingly, there is no queue of any team whatsoever coming into Formula One. Like, I mean, the last chat we heard about was actually Haas and a potential Romanian F1 team. But right now, there is no chatter, no manufacturer interest. So that is something that Ross Brawn and Liberty Media do have to have a look at, you know, going into the next decade.
I think there does need to be a dedicated entry scheme to see how these teams enter Formula One, because 2010 was a disaster. We had 4 teams scheduled to enter. One didn't even make it to the grid, USF1. All they made was a toaster, I'm fairly sure. HRT was pretty much stillborn on arrival. Virgin/Marussia was, of course, which became Manor. They did fairly well, and then, of course, there was Patron.
It was just a bit dodgy with the ownership and the management, and, like, you know, because of all the off-track scenes, there was just no space for development, which is why they were last basically every single season, apart from when HRT was still around up until the end of 2012.
Yeah, and of course in 2014 when they got that 1 point from Jules Bianchi, which has sent Caterham out of business, that was us. Caterham actually managed to squander a decent, relatively decent half for a backmarker, thanks to some poor management on the part of their owners. So, with that out of the way, we are in the middle of launch week at the moment. Plenty of new things being unveiled. We start off first with the first team to reveal their car.
Italics. Car.
Yes, they've just Williams have done what they usually do and just release a rendering before everybody else, just to say they were first. And they were straight out of the box with their 2017 offering, which has pretty much the same livery. We're going to be focusing probably more on livery than aerodynamics, because it's kind of difficult to talk air about air on radio. But yeah, pretty much the same livery. They haven't gone for the shark fin, which seems to be the big defining feature of a lot of these new cars. The shark fin is returning back. But yeah, a fairly decent, it's sort of fairly traditional looking Williams, and then it's got the thumb nose, which is stuck around, unfortunately. One of those hang-ups from 2014 and 2015. But other than that, the question is how Williams will be, will they be finally able to get some aero on this car? Because the one thing they have really struggled with is getting the aero on a good Mercedes engine.
Yeah, that's the big question. And when they eventually do release their full car, there will be a lot, and I do mean this, you know, 100%. There will be a lot of people going straight to the rear diffuser and the rear wing to see what their philosophy is for 2017, because, you know, straight line speed and, you know, going for, you know, being as slippery as possible just won't cut it in this new, for these new cars. You know, it just won't work, you know, anywhere near as what it did with the old cars up until 2016. And even then, they were really struggling towards the end of 2016, being overtaken by Force India. So, yeah, just a lot of question marks around Williams right now. And, that just doesn't seem to be a lot of new thinking and new and innovation going on at Williams at the moment, which, you know, for a Formula One team is pretty concerning.
Yeah, hopefully the arrival of Paddy Lowe does things to shake things up. That was one of the other big things that happened over the actual break, which we sort of forgot to talk about. Paddy Lowe left Mercedes, James Allison joined Mercedes, and apparently they've made some really good gains with their car. We'll talk about Mercedes a little bit later. Next up to release their offering was Sauber, who produces incredibly retro sort of livery, despite the fact that it's not actually a livery they've run in the past. Probably the breakout for the best new livery of the year, I have to say, Josh.
Yeah, and firstly, I have to say, I was very surprised and very impressed of Sauber when they were the first to announce and then release on time their cars. The first team to release their car, you have to consider, they were in a lot of financial problems, you know, just only in the middle of last year before they got new investors. So that's a good sign. The bad sign is that they've got the old Ferrari engine. And, you know, their car so far compared to the Force India, the Renault, and obviously the Mercedes, but, you know, it's sort of, you know, to the distance when you compare, you know, it's just lacking a little, like, even though it is complex, it's just not as complex enough as the big teams. So, yeah, unfortunately, I do see Sauber being 19th and 20th. 19th and 20th if Wehrlein can't get a surprise performance in for most of this season.
And looking back at the livery, so there's a little bit, I'm not sure if this is a good thing or a bad thing, there's a little bit of a tobacco advertising sort of feel with the blue gold and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other retro things like having the random white bit on the side, which sort of looks a little out of place, but not too out of place. But yeah, it's nice to see the Sauber got out of the box early. They've even already had a filming day. So obviously the car's rolling, so that's a good start from them. And yeah, hopefully Sauber will go fairly all right this year. Next up was Renault. Big things for the Renault F1 team expected for this year. They've been on a hiring spree. They've been getting as much experience as possible. and they unveiled the RS17 with a striking yellow and black livery, sort of calling back the livery they were at in 2010. Probably not as good, to be honest. It looks a little bit half done at some points, but still, it's great to see Renault out of the blocks. I mean, this was the first car where we got a proper look in the flesh of everything, all the aspects, the big tyres, which look very nice indeed, the big rear wing, the shark fin is back, and it looks very exciting indeed.
Yeah, like, I mean, apart from the 30-minute unannounced press interview at the start, you know, everything was just amazing and just, like, it was almost everything we almost expected of Renault. Like, I mean, you know, just a lot of innovation and, you know, just a lot of eagerness to actually properly get into Formula One and design their own car. Like, the back of the car looks absolutely amazing. It was specifically what the rulemakers wanted with these new cars, for them to look amazingly aggressive. And, you know, I absolutely love the livery. I love the little sponsorship details, especially the Castrol sponsorship. You know, I think that enriches the car. And, yeah, and, like, they've also embraced their own shark fin as well with their livery. Like, they haven't just, you know, it doesn't look like they've just splat, you know, just glued the shark fin on at the last minute. Like, they've properly, you know, incorporated it with their livery, and, you know, it just looks absolutely amazing. And I can't wait for when this car hits the track at Singapore and Abu Dhabi. Like, that, then it's going to look absolutely amazing. So hats off to Renault. You've made a brilliant looking car.
Hopefully it's as fast as it looks. Next up, Force India. They've only been good looking, but this year it looks like they've drawn the short straw a bit. They were the fourth team to reveal it. Their livery is a bit murt. There's, like, silver, but it's spread across the shark fin. It looks a little bit after. And they've also managed to somehow introduce a step nose and a finger nose to their car. So it's pretty much the two things Formula One fans hated about cars in 2012 and in 2014, but they brought it back. Good old Force India, their 10th year in the sport. But yeah, a bit of a mixed bag this one, Josh.
Yeah, well, no one was expecting a throwback to everything that was wrong, but Force India gave us that. So yeah, just the shark fin, it's unappealing. Like, you actually have to look at the picture for 5 seconds, because it's the same colour as the walls behind it, which are very uncharacteristic themselves. Like, I found it pretty interesting how Sergio Perez has high hopes for this season and says they're going to improve any more. And, like, I just think that's just a massive joke. Like, I mean, the three big teams ahead of them, Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, they've got enormous amounts of funding. Like, they could fund the amount of money, like, Ferrari get compared to Force India. Ferrari could fund their Force India's whole team and their whole catering business twice over pretty easily. So, honestly, I don't see Force India getting any better. Like, I did say this last year. I do think they've hit the wall in terms of how good they can actually get. And, honestly, I can only see this team either stagnating or going down. And, like, that's just the reality. That's just the best they can do. And the best they could do was last year. And, it's a pretty unappealing car, to say the least. Also, you have to factor in that Ocon probably won't be as consistent in bagging points as Nico Hülkenberg was, even though he did have a lot of bad luck circling around him, and that will be the case for the first half of this season. So, yeah, I'm just unsure with Force India right now. So, yeah, just like, it would be good for them to really, you know, do well in the midfield, but I don't see them being at the front.
And just having a look at the cars, a couple of things interesting. They managed to snare some Johnny Walker sponsorship, which of course McLaren had a couple of years ago, but they lost to Formula One in general. And it looks like Johnny Walker is now going to sponsor a team, and the team they've chosen is Force India. as well. And the only way I could possibly see them going up is if Ferrari falls even further.
But they'd have a long way to fall for that.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. Yes, exactly. It's not like we saw saw Force India fighting for podiums. Now, the final teams that we've got so far to release their car is Mercedes. We sort of botched it a little bit because they went and streamed it on Facebook with a 360 camera. But then the camera was pretty much about 2 meters away from the car. You never got a good view of it. And then before that, they'd actually done a demo run before they revealed it. So the pictures were already out to the press before finally it was unveiled on the staff in Australia at Silverstone. So yeah, it took a while for them to get it out properly, but it is out. It's looking very nice indeed. They've gone with the same nose structure that they had for the last few years, which is nice to see. They've also got an interesting little sort of rearing just before the rearing near the shark fin, which they aren't running, which is an interesting development from them. But yeah, also slightly new livery. They've got a few more streaks on their Petronas smirt on the side, the blue smirt. But other than that, big things promised for the Mercedes, and let's face it, they're probably going to deliver.
Yeah, so, very good signs from Mercedes right now, you know, whether or not, still debating whether or not that they're going to either use the T-wing or the shark fin. So, obviously, they've, put a lot of thought into this car. Like, the car looks, you know, almost textbook in terms of maxing out a 2017 era F1 car, so it's got that going for it. Also, they've made unprecedented development with their engine, so obviously they've unlocked something new and innovative with their engine, which is pretty remarkable considering towards the back end of last year they were chucking out 1,000 brake horsepower. So, you know, who knows, by the end of this season they could be up to 1,100 horsepower. So, yeah, just they've done absolute wonders, it seems like, with their Mercedes engine, and, you know, they're just not giving up with the development on that. So it's going to be more reliable, more quick, going to put down the power better, and it's going to be a big ask for Red Bull and Renault to really capitalize and get to where Mercedes are, but they do have the ability to do it. The signs from Renault and their power unit is pretty positive, but they were still quite some way behind before the development race for this year really kicked in. So, yeah, just really positive signs from Mercedes and from Lewis Hamilton in redeeming himself in getting the 2017 world title, because, like, let's be honest, like, you know, Bottas is going to be the one getting, you know, the second places and backing him up and, you know, just securing the constructors' title. So, yeah, very positive signs coming out from Mercedes, and they'll certainly be one to watch, and they could possibly do even more laps than what they did last year, which was something like 10 Spanish Grand Prix in testing.
I thought it was the entire season, pretty much, in general.
Yeah, but basically the entire season. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they do that again from the start of next week. So, yeah, very positive signs from Mercedes right now.
Yeah, should be pretty exciting indeed. So that's half the grid have unveiled their 2017 challenges. We've got another half of the grid to go coming up pretty much tomorrow morning, Australian time, or later in the day for European time. The Ferrari and McLaren cars will be unveiled. Ferrari will be their new car and possibly a new livery for them, as well as possibly another new livery for McLaren. They've also changed their driver numbering after they ousted Ross Dennis last year. And then the day after that, we get Toro Rosso and Red Bull. Red Bull is interesting. Well, Red Bull will be the same as last year, because that looks to be the brand. The matte look seems to be rolled out across the board. They've got similar liveries in VS Supercars and in their KTM-sponsored MotoGP outfit. Toro Rosso will be interesting to see what they do as well. And Haas, they pretty much had a pretty low effort.
They're very brand livery for their first season, so I'm hoping for a lot more. Haas is a very interesting one team to look at for this season. Obviously, there's always going to be the chance of second-year Blues where they don't do as well, which could put them down all the way down to ninth in the constructors' standings. They were the second team to start development of this year's card behind Manor, which are now out of the sport. There is that. But then again, I'd still remember a report in the second half of last year saying that they were behind in their development of this year's car. So they obviously started early, but they were behind in some aspect, whether it was compared to their ambitious aims or their relative aims. Like, all we know is they were behind. We don't know what or who, but yeah, they were behind. So yeah, Haas is going to be a really interesting one, and hopefully we see some of the American flamboyance reflected in livery, and possibly some new sponsors as well, considering they did so well in their first year.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how Haas go. So, pre-season testing will begin next Monday. We'll bring you all the latest from that next week. In general, the big thing we'll be looking forward to see how fast the cars are, just in comparison to last year. Of course, the actual time between teams are generally, they have no relevance whatsoever to performance later on in the year because each team goes in with different aims. Ferrari will always be looking for the pace or the speed, but Mercedes have generally gone for the endurance, and you can expect them to run up to more big numbers this season. So it should be very exciting. As we still build up to the Australian Grand Prix, which is over a month away, a very late start, but still be a very tightly packed Formula One season. Let's move back to Australia, to the world of supercars. Plenty has happened in the off-season, plenty of drama. We start off first, though, with the news that we sort of expected was coming, but we hoped didn't come, that Gary Rogers Motorsport has been forced to switch to Holden after that deal with Volvo ended at the beginning of the last year. They went to mediation, but they weren't able to get an extension. Those cars are now already on the way to Sweden. And we will see Garth Tander and James Moffat facing up in Holden's this year.
Yeah, so one of those Volvos is going to go to a museum. I'm not exactly sure which one, but a Swedish museum, so along with their Volvo tanks. And another one's just going to go into a garage, which unfortunately means it is going to collect dust, which is really unfortunate because it is such a good package. The Holdens that they brought, like, they had to build four Holdens, two for the main game and two for the Super 2 series, the new, the rebranded development series for their development team. So, yeah, there is that. They're also going to be one of the three teams alongside Nissan and Prodrive, I think, that are going to run wildcard entries throughout the season for James Golding. So there is that to look forward to. 29, the real possibility of 29 car grids for Winton and for Queensland Raceway. So yeah, there is that. There were no reported dramas for their new Commodores, which is a good sign. But you know, it's still the question over speed. They did okay, but not too great. But then again, you can never tell during preseason testing. So yeah, just bit of a stagnating year for GRM. I don't expect them to be contending that much for race wins because they have to change their whole setup philosophy because it was very much centered around Scott McLaughlin and what he wanted. Now that he's gone to DJR Team Penske, they have to basically cater for James Moffat and for Garth Tander. So, yeah, just Yeah, a bit of a stagnating year. Obviously, in the off-season, in the past few months, there have been the rumours of Alfa Romeo and also Kia as two of the main possible manufacturers to team up with Gary Rogers for 2018. Both line up pretty well with the new Commodore coming in as well as a possible Mustang that Roger Penske seems to be tirelessly campaigning for in Detroit. So there is that as well. So yeah, just interesting times, but I can certainly see Gary Rogers signing a deal. I can actually see the Alfa Romeo deal actually working and having a similar effect as the Volvo deal. Obviously, they don't have to contend with as many negative stereotypes. But the Kia one is always a bit of a pipe dream, even though Hyundai have expanded their motorsport commitments for 2017. So that's the state of play for Gary Rogers at the moment, but they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
So, it's the first show of the year, and we have already got some Lucas Dumbrell driver shenanigans to have a look at. Pretty interesting preseason for them. They've got two young new drivers, 16-year-old Alex Rullo, who will be the youngest Supercars driver so far in their history. Matt Chada, though, wasn't as lucky, even though he's 23. He wasn't given he wasn't given a super license, a CAN's Lou super license of the new system this year, to actually drive for them, which has sort of put LDM's driver preparations a bit out of whack. In fact, they've had to actually think about possibly having Aaron Russell in that second seat because of his sponsorship. So, yeah. Another chaotic start to the year for Lucas Dumbrell Motorsport. Not the start they would have wanted, would it?
No, not at all. And, there's a lot of angst against Lucas Dumbrell. Like, people were looking forward to seeing who they were going to pick for their driver lineup this year. And there were some pretty tasty options, like Chris Pither, fresh from his pole at Queensland Raceway last year, and also Andre Heimgartner, another solid, consistent performer. So, and it's pretty odd because, like, Chris Pither, he does have that financial backing that Alex Rullo has, and, like, I sort of maybe understand the Alex Rullo deal and Lucas Dumbrell wanting to sign him up, except for the fact that he didn't do too well in the development series last year, and that, you know, he just hasn't got the experience needed to really capitalize. But, you know, he is Lucas Dumbrell's development driver, so to say, and now he's got a ride in the main game. And, he did put it into the wall at Winton at Turn 2, so in his little shakedown, so that's not that desirable for your first time. But he was pretty good, 73 laps without incident at the test at Sydney Motorsport Park. Matt Chada, I don't want him at all in supercars, you know, especially when you remember that he caused that massive chaotic turn one, lap one crash at Sandown in the development series last year, which certainly angered quite a lot of the paddock. And he's actually not that young compared to Alex Rullo. He's about 24, so he's a bit of a
he's Pastor Maldonado.
He's too much past the Maldonado, and I could certainly see him becoming the new Maldonado in World Motorsport for 2017, as he's got all the qualifications needed to take up that role. So, yeah, just I know Alex Rullo, you know, he's pretty reserved. Like, he didn't cause that many, if any, incidents in the development series last year. He just wasn't fast enough. That's the only problem with him. Like, I mean, I don't really care that much about age. It's just experience, which is sort of age, but it isn't. you know, so there you are. And speed, experience and speed is what, you know, makes a good choice. So, yeah, just, I did say to Naveen in the off season that they're probably choosing these drivers to, so that Lucas can really invest, in the team. But yeah, that's only guessing from the outside looking in, because the inside of LDM is pretty, it's wound up pretty tight. We don't really know what's going on, in there, but yeah, just, honestly, like, I don't particularly think Aaron Russell is a good choice for LDM either, considering his, whole shenanigans, with, LDM and Erebus last year. But, you know, if there's no one else, because, like, I mean, you know, people are signing up contracts for development series and support categories and Australian GT and things abroad. Like, I mean, you know, there are not that many drivers left at the moment, as we are almost in March. So, yeah, just a bit of a bad situation for LDM. And it always confirms that they're going to be at the back of the pack when you consider how safe and consistent Erebus is right now, with their Enduro picks already being decided even before the season has begun, which really caught me by surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be another difficult year for LDM, you have to say. Moving a bit further upfield, Ludo Lacroix made news when he moved from 888 to Penske, and it's been confirmed now that he will engineer Scott McLaughlin in that number 17 Penske, I think.
Yeah, he's got the 17 car this year.
Yes, so that is big news for McLaughlin. He's going to have a nice, he's going to have probably one of the best engineers in the paddock up there with the likes of Kaushi and McPherson and Dutton from 888. So we really do need to expect big things from Penske this year. They've got everybody in place. The question is, will they be able to deliver on that win?
That's a really big question. And yeah, like, I mean, that, like, there is a little bit of consistency in there. Like, Penske is finally getting all his marbles into place. Like, he's got two star drivers in the shape of Scott McLaughlin, who we all know is potential future champion, and Fabian Coulthard as well, who is who I sort of akin to a young Garth Tander in terms of his consistency, always being up there with the occasional race win and the outside chance of a championship victory. But yeah, so big things have to start happening right now for Penske. Like, I mean, you know, they've got stability with their sponsorship this year. Like, they've got a pretty lucrative deal with Shell, who have made their biggest commitment to supercars for quite some time. And
their biggest commitment since they sponsored the series in the early 2000s, you'd have to say.
Yeah, basically since then. So it's been a long time. So, yeah, there is, you know, cause for excitement in the Penske camp, but yeah, just really big question mark over where exactly they are in terms of the pecking order. Like, they probably still are behind 888 and Red Bull, but you know, that you wouldn't put your money off them being not too far off them. Especially towards the second half of the season. And you'd have to say that this is the year where Roger Penske gets his first Supercars race win.
Yeah, you'd have to say, if not, there might be a clock running on Penske's future in the sport. Finally, we have news that Supercars has confirmed this new driving standards advisor. Craig Baird takes over from Jason Balguano in the revised role. The biggest news, though, coming out of these changes to the judicial system is that the redress rule is gone. It's out of there after causing much controversy at last year's Bathurst 1000. It's out of there. If you make the mistake, you have to wait for the penalty. You can't do any dodgy systems where you try and get things back and stuff as well. They've also have a more lenient view in multi-car incidents where they can't really determine whether one competitor is clearly at fault, which pretty much falls into sort of what happened last year at Bathurst. Let's face it, I think this is probably the best thing because the Regis rule, yeah, it's part of the Australian sort of honour system, but it's difficult to manage when you've got guys racing their hearts out at 300 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, I did have a little bit of hope for the redress rule, and, like, I did believe that with time it could work. But, you know, in the end, I think this has to be the decision that Supercars need to take. Like, I mean, you know, it was certainly not a good sign when Jamie Wincup finished first, but was the car in second. Will Davison that won Bathurst last year. So that this hopefully gets rid of that ever happening again. So yeah, just
of course Mark Dutton is one of the few people to speak out against this decision because he was on the wrong end of it last time. I think McLaughlin has said that he's sort of happy with it. It's sort of based on what they did in the old days, and the same has come from Tim Edwards, boss at ProDrive. But other than that, I think it's sort of had a mixed reception. Well, I think most of the group, and I think a lot of the fans will be happy that it's gone and that...
Yeah, nice phone.
Phone's got off.
Yep.
Oh, it's been taken. Yeah, and that the rules are pretty much now much more clear, and I think we should prevent any of these grey areas we've had in the past.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, I did see last year that most drivers were in favour of the redress, but, yeah, I think this sort of does have to happen, like, just when you consider how narrow most of the circuits are. Like, I mean, they're certainly not, like, certainly not every track there's, like, you know, space for cars that can go three wide absolutely everywhere. Like, there are quite a few areas on the supercars calendar where it's basically just single file. So, I think this is for the best. And, like, hopefully Craig Mayer does a good job. Like, he's had a lot of experience in racing, and there was his pretty big I'd almost call it an oops moment at the Bathurst 12-hour where he punted off the Ferrari Craig Lowndes at the safety car restart. So yeah, there is that. So, but Craig Baird's been on the ramp for a very, very long time. Jason Barguana, he's moving on to help his son start his motor racing career, with his son actually starting his very first season in Australian motorsport. So he's going to focus most of his attention on that. So he'll be around, but he'll mostly be at the smaller race events around the country, and specifically around New South Wales. So that's where he's gone off to. So yeah, hopefully, Craig Baird, you know, does a really good job and provides the racing.
Let's move overseas to the world of United States auto racing and to NASCAR. Now, at the end of last season, NASCAR got a new title sponsor. Sprint left them. They've been replaced by Monster Energy, but they received far less money for that than they did the Sprint deal. And that, along with falling TV ratings and some stagnating crowd figures, has resulted in NASCAR completely shaking up the format with a new three-stage racing format, a new chase system. It's all changed. It's still kind of quite confusing. Josh, why don't you try and break it down for the listeners?
So basically, NASCAR three-stage system, which is a little bit self-explanatory. Basically, the races divide up into three stages. So there's going to be about 30% into the race. There's going to be a first competition caution where everyone can dive into the pits. At the end of that first little stage, points are awarded to the top 10 guys on track. Then it's basically the same thing for the second stage, points awarded to the top 10, and at 60% of race distance. And then for the final 40%, it's basically a race to the flag where 4 points will be awarded. Basically the stage winner receives an additional playoff bonus point, which won't come into effect until the chase actually starts. So basically it means when the chase starts, the stage winner of a race basically gets a head start. Basically what race wins used to be for the chase, where you get 10 points extra for a race win. That's what it was. This is what it is now. So basically, what NASCAR is trying to do is get rid of those 200-lap green flag runs that you can see at places like Atlanta, Las Vegas, some of the more 1.5 mile oval circuits. So, yeah, like, I mean, whether or not it'll work, like, I mean, if it does work, like, I mean, it'll be praised, like the three compound tire rule that Formula One had last year. If it stagnates, like, I'll prefer it to go back. If it turns out to be like elimination qualifying, then there'll be riots, and like, we could see it scrapped before season ends. So, yeah, just it's ambitious. They sort of have to do it to get the crowds back and get the interest back in to the sport. Like, I mean, you know, it's a big sport, but it's just lacking with interest right now. And like, there could be the scenario where to get it back, they just need to simplify, you know, the racing, and, you know, just go 36 race season. But then again, you could risk having a runaway champion who seals it 8 races before the finish. But then again, you know, if the final events are, you know, lucrative enough, it won't damage it too much. So there's a, now this guy's at a bit of a crossroads right now. And also another thing, the new damage rule is in place, which I don't particularly like. It negatively affected the class, where I think it was Chase Elliott who was sent off the track and out of the race because he had a small dent, which is, it's understandable at Daytona, but the old rules, you know, certainly provided enough safety for the driver and everyone around him. So there is that as well. Also, I don't particularly like the name of the series itself, the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. I would have much preferred the NASCAR Monster Energy Premier Series, but maybe that was part of the deal, the clauses of the deal. And it's only a reported $20 million a year, I believe, which compared to Sprint is much less. I think Sprint gave them $100 million a year. So, yeah, certainly a haircut deal. And hopefully it does engage the younger audience, which is what this new deal is sort of targeting. But at the end of the day, it is much less than what it was 5-10 years ago.
Yeah, the thing that interests me about this, okay, well, first off, the chase is no longer called a chase, it's called the playoffs. And because you're allowed to still accrue points from the beginning of the year, that they're trying to make it more relevant. My argument would just be, keep the playoffs, but just get rid of the little wins to qualify. Just take the top 16 and maybe include that in that as well. And also, with the stage format, why not just have two races and have things simplified like that? Because I think the TV networks would rather like that if they have a race on Saturday and Sunday, which people care about. And I think as well, it's probably more easier to explain than this weird stage format and stuff like that. Because, and the question is whether this will turn off the traditional NASCAR audience, which, if you know your demographics, tends to be...
Yeah, like, I mean, out of all the series in the world, the NASCAR fan base is one that hates change. Like, I mean, you know, they're not hillbillies, which they were back in the 50s. They're much more grown up. Like, I mean, there wasn't, like, mass riots and Confederate flags everywhere when Daniel Suarez was announced as Carl Edwards' replacement at Joe Gibbs Racing, first Mexican to compete in the series full-time, who actually has the potential to beat Marcus Ambrose for the all-time wins for a non-US-based driver. Marcus Ambrose, of course, has 7 across the Monster Energy, Xfinity, and Camping World truck series across the board. And I think Suarez has, I think, 3 or 4. So he's only got 3 or 4 wins left to go until he matches my hero. So basically, you know, he's in very good machinery. Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, one of the form teams of the category, and like he's got plenty of time. He's only like 24 years of age, so he's pretty young and can stay in NASCAR for basically about 10 years or even more. So there's no reason why at the end of Suarez's career he can become one of the all-time greats, and certainly almost dwarf Marcus Ambrose and Juan Pablo Montoya's NASCAR career, which, given their given both their drivers' caliber, you know, it's certainly no easy feat. So, yeah, there is that. But anyway, back to the fan base. Like, it's still a fan base that hates change. Like, it likes to keep things simple. Like, basically, race on Sunday, qualify earlier. Like, I mean, qualify is not everything and doesn't mean much. But, you know, it's the race on Sunday. Like, I mean, Sunday afternoon, Saturday night, you know, yeah, keep it simple, and NASCAR is being pretty ambitious with this new system, whether or not it'll work. If it does, it will be called a genius move. If it doesn't, then, like, I mean, there will be certainly a lot of unrest right now. So, interesting times ahead for NASCAR, but they really do need to make this work, and, you know, also, they need to start thinking about what's next, because, like, the Gen 6 cars, they're not sort of new anymore. They've been around for about 3 or 4 seasons already, and there's not a lot of talk right now about what the future holds, whether or not they would eventually go down to turbocharged V6s. But then again, NASCAR is a unique product with the tandem and draft style racing for long periods of time at Talladega, whether or not turbocharged engines can actually sustain the strain of being right, of having basically no air go through into the air intake and into the coolant. So, yeah, like, I mean, a lot of questions that NASCAR needs to answer this year and beyond.
Mm. And finally, on that new format, you have to remember that the payoff is meant to be that we're going to have less commercials and green flag racing, which would be nice to see. Whether it happens in progress and whether we're going to just have lots of cautions is another question. So we're sort of in the middle of the first event of the NASCAR season. Last weekend was the curtain raiser, the clash at Daytona. Joey Logano took that after Brad Keselowski crashed on the final lap. A good thing from NASCAR not to throw out the caution and force it into overtime. So we got this really exciting finish at the end. That was, of course, on Sunday morning because it was raining on Saturday night. And later on Sunday afternoon, Chase Elliott took pole position for the Daytona 500, which will be probably one of the youngest Daytona 500 pole sitters. He'll have Dale Earnhardt Jr. next to him. So certainly pretty exciting things happening at the front of the grid.
Yeah, for sure. And this is Chase's second Daytona 500 pole in a row. So, you know, he got that basically on debut, which is certainly a pretty amazing feat for him to accomplish. So, yeah, right now it's looking pretty good for Hendrick to mount a challenge against Joe Gibbs Racing, and also Penske are throwing their hat into the ring as well. So it's going to be mainly those three big teams going at it for the championship this year. And, yeah, it should be a pretty good one. Like, I mean, obviously, there's going to be the competition caution. So, well, the stages, I should say, that will come into play throughout the race. So, like, I mean, you could potentially see teams, you know, just hanging back from the main pack, you know, throughout the first two stages, just trying to get their car, you know, to stage three so that they can be in a chance for win and to get some really good points straight off the bat. So, yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting. Grid positions 3 to 40 will be finalized in the two dual races that will happen. They're basically almost happening now.
I think they are happening now whilst we're recording. We don't have the TV on in the background, but they are happening. So we won't be able to bring you the latest from that. But yeah, it should certainly be a very exciting Daytona 500. Even with these changes, it's always a great race to start off the NASCAR season.
Always an amazing event, and you know, always going to be on the bucket list for motorsport fans around the world. So yeah, 59th running of the Daytona 500. And because it is Super Speedway racing and tandem racing, group racing, pack racing, you know, it's got almost going to be impossible to predict who's going to win. And you know, you can only see from past races where, you know, people who drivers who have only there was Trevor Bayh back in 2011 who won the Daytona 500 in only his second Cup Series race, his first ever Daytona 500. So anyone can, and anyone will win. So yeah, it's going to be a good one on Sunday.
Looking at some of the other action that happened over last weekend, Formula E returned. It was yet another dominant win for Sebastian Buemi, who's becoming scarily good at the moment. It could possibly be a walkover from him this year. He took the victory at the Marini's as E-Prix, keeping John Eric Vernon. It was a good performance for Takita, or however they're called now. Lucas Degrassi was on pole, but he wasn't able to match him. So another good result for Sebastian Buemi. Things looking very strong for Renault E-Dams at the moment.
Obviously Buemi, like, first ever driver to get three Formula E E-Prix wins in a row. So yeah, that's one for the record books, and he could go in to win four, five, you know, who knows. So yeah, he's in a class of his own right now. There is a slight kicker right now, which really does mean this championship is far from over. Buemi, and I think it's Jose Mariano Lopez, a former WTCC champion, will miss the New York E-Prix and 58 valuable points because both those drivers have other commitments at the 6 hours of the Nürburgring for the 2017 World Endurance Championship. So the magic number is 58 points. Right now, I think he's got about 30 to 40 points. So there's no reason why Buemi can't get 58 points by the time Formula E heads to New York. And also there is the Montreal E-Prix straight after that, which he can salvage the championship from there. So yeah, like that's the real kicker, and that's something that hasn't actually been addressed that much in Formula E so far. So that's something just to keep in the back of your mind. 58 points, that's the magic number for Formula E in Season 3. So yeah, it's far from over, and it could very well go down to a Buemi versus Degrassi showdown in Montreal.
Should be very exciting indeed. We move now to IndyCar and some slightly less happy news that KV Racing has confirmed its closure and it will no longer compete in the Verizon IndyCar Series. Kevin Kalkhoven and Jimmy Vassan have closed their team after 14 years. Most of those assets have been sold out to Juncos Racing. The team scored 7 IndyCar victories, including Tony Kanaan's win at the 2013 Indianapolis 500. They've been generally pretty strong throughout the last few seasons, had good runs with Sebastian Buemi, but unfortunately, it has all had to come to an end.
Yeah, a really sad closure, and basically, KV Racing, like that, they weren't some backmarket team, like Aston Martin said. They were. They did win the Indy 500, which is what every IndyCar team dreams of doing, and just their list of drivers that they previously had, like Will Power, Oriol Servia, Mika Salo, Max Pappas, Paul Tracy,
Neil Yarny,
Takuma Sato, Sebastian Bourdais, a lot of Formula One couldn't do it, tried but Bowers, Rubens Barrichello as well, Simone DiSilvestro, which we'll talk about quite a lot this year. Just a high caliber of drivers, and obviously they had a good eye picking some really good drivers as well. So yeah, unfortunately, like that they did win last year with Sebastian Bourdais in Detroit. But yeah, unfortunately, it's the end of the road for them. And like, I mean, they will be missed. They will be missed. They were a pretty good team, and they did make it into the Fast Six quite a few times last year. So yeah, just it's not going to be good with them gone. But in saying that, you know, it certainly doesn't make this new season of IndyCar any less exciting. And hopefully, with the new IndyCars coming out in 2018 or 2019, hopefully the costs are controlled with the IndyCars going back to the traditional looking IndyCar, you know, open wheelers compared to the DW12, which they're currently running right now. But obviously with the safety enhancements of the DW12 itself. So yeah, it sets up a pretty interesting IndyCar season for 2017. 16 races right across America and one in Canada. So yeah, it's going to be a pretty interesting season. Obviously, all eyes are on Joseph Newgarden in Penske, who had a pretty successful preseason test at Phoenix. Also, the only rookie is Abu Dhabi born, but American but I think British raised Ed Jones, who graduates from the Indy Lights, who'll race alongside Sebastian Bourdais at Dale Coyne Racing. So he's another guy to keep an eye on in car 19, who was pretty consistent, in the Indy Lights last year. Obviously, you know, you've got, you know, Penske, who are running four cars all season and five for the Indy 500 with Juan Pablo Montoya jumping in. And then you've got your regular contenders as well. You know, Justin Newgarden, Alexander Rossi, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Carlos Munoz, James Hinchcliffe, and the ever-continuing rise of Mikhail Aloshin. So, yeah, still, you know, all the main contenders return once again for 2017, and yeah, should be another fantastic year.
My only concern is that we might possibly see at some of the road courses the driver lineup start to get a little light, because they were getting around 21 average runners for each race last year, with the departure of KB Racing, that could drop down to 20 or maybe lower. But it looks like they should have a full grid, a very competitive grid again this year. It's going to be difficult to see how anybody's going to be stopping Penske. And also, if you see how Chip Ganassi switched to Honda, will that pay off? Very exciting. And of course, testing that's been happening over the last few weeks. Simon Pagenaud and Ryan Hunter-Reay have been very quick at Phoenix, whilst Takuma Sato pretty much did what Takuma Sato does on ovals and crashes again. He's actually moved over to Andretti following the Honda sponsorship. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes on his part.
Yeah, hopefully it goes well. Like, I mean, you know, let's not forget, like, he has finished on the podium in Formula 1 before when he raced it when the US Grand Prix was at Indianapolis. But yeah, just it just hasn't really, you know, gelled with the oval, with open wheel oval racing. But yeah, he's with Andretti Autosport, which is one of the prestigious IndyCar teams, and obviously with that big name of Andretti hanging over his, that's going to be hanging over his garage. He's going to be teammates with Marco Andretti and Ryan Hunter-Reay, both proven IndyCar drivers. So yeah, Takuma Sato, he needs to perform, but yeah, he just needs to keep it off the walls and out of the infield on the ovals.
So that's pretty much all the time we've got for this week. Next week, it will be our big Supercars season preview ahead of the Clipsal 500. The last ever round at Adelaide with that Clipsal name, by the way. There'll also be all the wrap-up from Formula 1 testing and the Daytona 500. We'll be coming with you pretty much every week throughout 2017, from the first green flag at Clipsal to the end of the season at Newcastle. Should be a Or maybe even Abu Dhabi.
It's the same weekend, so technically Abu Dhabi will finish the season, will finish the global motorsport season off. But then again, there is always Formula E in the off season.
Yes, so it should be a very exciting year. We've got new regulations in Formula One. The last year of the old era in V8 supercars, new regulations in NASCAR, hopefully a revitalized IndyCar series, and much more. It'll be a pleasure to talk to you guys throughout the year. Me and Joshua Carroll-Alden will be here every week on the Mobile Chicane. So that's us done for today. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.